welcome to A Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and if a Stephen King antagonist would instantly defeat me, it would of course be Captain Trips, just statistically, from The Stand, because it killed over 99% of the population. So I wouldn't have to be that scared even, I'd just be dead.
Wait, is that the plague? The disease?
Yeah.
Wow, okay. My name's Joanna Robinson. And if a Stephen King antagonist were to defeat me as quickly as possible, it would have to be the mean teen / mean mom of Carrie. Yes, I consider them the antagonist, and Carrie is obviously our hero.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if a Stephen King antagonist was going to defeat me quickly, it would definitely be the Mist, because I would probably be in my house and wouldn't even notice it, and then my house would get eaten by a monster. That's how the Mist works, right?
Yeah.
It's actually a tear into the Toad Ash space, but yes, that's a bit that's basically it.
And that, thus, we have the full representation of the spectrum of Stephen King experts available on this podcast, right?
probably.
That's how the Mist works, right? Actually.
Well, let me don my Stephen King fedora and tell you my king cap. We're back for another cast of Stephen King. This time we'll be focusing more around the Hulu series Castle Rock, which is 5 episodes in when this episode of Storm of Spoilers is released. It is a 10 episode series. That means we're halfway through. We're going to discuss some of what's happened in the series so far, our overall thoughts about it, and maybe some theories about what's going to happen at the end of it. All that after a sort of generalized Stephen King mailbag from you, the listeners, who listened to our previous cast of King and was like, do better next time. So here we are. Next time, we're going to try to do
reaction.
Better. Yeah, they were all like, huh.
I think it's helpful that we have this like TV show to talk about, you know. But we should say off the bat, if you're a Stephen King expert, other than Dave, we are not experts. So like, that's not what you're going to get. Maybe that's like what people thought they were going to get. We're like Stephen King experts last time. That's not us. So you're going to get a bunch of people who have read and seen some things and have definitely watched these 5 episodes of television.
For sure, yes. And I also am not, I wouldn't describe myself as an expert, but I love compliments. So I'll take it, Joanna. Also, if you are a subscriber to patreon.com/stormofspoilers at the Maester level or above, this week you'll be getting a bonus segment about the Television Critics Association grab bag. We're just going to talk about television and television news that caught our attention.
We haven't done enough grab bags.
Yeah, there hasn't been enough grab bags. There hasn't been enough press conferences about exciting new things that are coming this fall. This time we get to do it for television after just doing it for Comic-Con. So that'll be for you special subscribers out there. But first, Joanna, do we have any reviews this week?
We have a couple. I am going to read 2 of them. One is from Wrangle 0007, 5 stars. Ooh. Conservative justice warrior. I started listening to the Joannaverse podcast 2 years ago and always meant to write a review. Now that I have an iPhone, I'm finally doing it. As a Christian who listens to equal parts biblical teaching podcasts and entertainment podcasts, I enjoy listening to the thoughts and opinions of the hosts as they struggle through pop culture and societal debates during their off-season tour. It's been a joy hearing Dave and Joanna and Neil every week, and I highly recommend taking a few hours out of your day to listen to their podcasts, like Little Gold Men, Decoding Westworld, Still Watching, Fighting the War Room, and One Perfect Pod Series. P.S. I haven't fallen down all year, and it's all because of these guys. P.P.S. Joanna started watching Twin Peaks The Return, but there are only the last 2 episodes available of Peaks TV you did with Dave Chen. Are these removed from the internet? Do you know how I can access them? Thanks again. Keep doing great work. I'm going to find the answer to that, and I will answer it in a little bit. But first, I'm going to read their second review, which is 1 star, Vern25. This is sort of the flip side of the conservative justice warrior coin. Vern25 says, stop the politics! ! 1 star. We come to your podcast to get away from the real world. Stop talking about Trump. Also, don't alienate half the U.S. population by bashing on Trump, too, as you're just reducing the potential customer base of your podcast. Cool. That's the end of that review.
Wait. Is that guy paying us?
He might be in our Slack. I don't know.
That would be interesting. If he is paying us, I would like to hear from him in the Slack as to how he thinks this works. I'd be interested.
Yeah, I I'm never gonna stop talking about how much Trump sucks. So sorry for 25. Sorry, not sorry.
Also, yeah. Statistically, not half the U.S. population. Correct. Just numbers.
Also, I don't have time to explain to you how both pop culture and politics and the intersection of the two works. We got other shit to do here.
Escapism is for all the media produced in the 2017 previous years. And then, you know, now we just got to deal with the hand that we're dealt. For instance, Neil each week checks in with the weekly hands that were dealt pop culture wise. Neil, take us storm chasing.
Yeah, we're going storm chasing, which is all about a pop culture storm that you're chasing. You get it. So which one movie, show, book, story, podcast, etc. are you obsessed with? We're going to start with Joanna this week because I'm curious to see what obsessions she has brought from her week off.
Oh, yeah, totally. I watched the entirety of a Canadian series called Schitt's Creek. There are four seasons of it available, three of which are on Netflix. The other one I watched on like Xfinity because I apparently get Pop, which is the channel that it airs on. I actually saw a panel for this show at TCA like earlier this year, and I was like, how is this show in a fourth season and I've never heard of it? And then it hit Netflix and like a bunch of people started talking about it, but apparently it's like fairly popular in Canada. Anyway, point being, it is Eugene Levy, Catherine O'Hara, Chris Elliott, who I actually actively hate, but I got through it. And then Daniel Levy.
Bananas.
And then Daniel Levy, who's Eugene Levy's son. And it's like co-created by Eugene Levy and Dan Levy. Dan Levy, it's about... I was trying to explain it to someone and they were like, oh, so it's like The Blues. So yes, it's about this like super rich family who like lose all their money into some kind of Ponzi scheme. They are stripped of all their assets and they are forced to go to this town called Schitt's Creek, which is a place that they bought like on a whim for like shits and giggles because it's called Schitt's Creek, spelled S-C-H-I-T-T apostrophe S, and live there in this like shitty motel. And it's like very much fish out of water, culture clash comedy. It's really funny. I mean, Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy, we know, are like complete geniuses, whether you watch SCTV or you watch any of the Christopher Guest films or you saw American Pie and Home Alone and whatever. Anyway, comedy classics. Dan Levy, however, is incredible in this. And apparently he's like something of like a known thing in Canada. He was like an MTV VJ for MTV Canada and stuff like that. But like if you Google him right now, you're like, oh, it's a handsome Eugene Levy. Eugene Levy is like fine handsome, but this guy like has his eyebrows but makes it work. And anyway, I really, really love this show. Like I said, first three seasons are on Netflix. You can fast forward through the Chris Elliott scenes as I did sometimes, and enjoy.
Fast forward through the Chris Elliott scenes.
That guy is like comedy, where comedy goes to die, is Chris Elliott. That's how I feel about him.
Okay. Not a fan of Cabin Boy over here.
He's the guy in Dumb and Dumber who got like the zit on his eyeball, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I the only person who doesn't dislike Chris Elliott's cinema?
I mean, I don't care.
Cabin Boy is, you know.
When I come back, I'll be a cabin man. Yeah. That's still one of my favorite jokes from when I was 12.
See, that's got to mean something.
Only to a 12-year-old version of me.
Neil, what's your storm this week?
So mine is, do you guys use the platform Letterboxd, where David Ehrlich is like the most famous person?
Is he?
Yeah, no, after I got eclipsed by David after like 2 weeks of the service existing, yeah, I stopped using it.
Yeah, a big deal over there. Anyway, I'm on Letterboxd, username officially Neil, that's me. But I was going through and updating my Letterboxd today, and I noticed that my movie watching this year, well, in the last 2 months at least, is just all podcast stuff. So it's like three topics. It's The Rock, Mission Impossible, and now shark movies. Well, Stephen King movies, spoilers, and shark movies. Yeah, I know. So I am going to use whatever is left of MoviePass's money, and I'm going to try and diversify my Letterboxd diary in the next month. That's my goal for August. So I'm going to go see. I'm going to try and go see Eighth Grade. I need to finally see Blind Spotting. There's just a bunch of movies that I'm like going to go catch up on. Also, I'm going to see the Giant Shark movie. So
Eighth Grade is great.
Yeah, I just realized that, like, you know, I've been sort of siloed into a bunch of very manly movies, but I'm ready to maybe watch some other stuff.
I feel like that's how I felt after Solo came out, is just like I looked back and there were other movies that weren't Star Wars and Black Panther, and I was like, oh no, and I'm still trying to catch up with this year's movies. And it's been months, but
I also did rewatch the thing Dave's about to talk about. So I'm a hypocrite.
Speaking of me saying that I'm still trying to catch up, Infinity War is out for digital download and renting. And then the Blu-ray comes out, I believe, on the 14th or next week. It is the third time I've watched it. First two times were in theaters. This was the first time I watched it holding my own Hasbro Marvel Select Infinity Gauntlet, and also with Java, who hadn't seen it. Obviously, we watch movies very differently because she looked at me really weird as I was, like, cradling this plastic toy. But that movie really still cooks, you know? I've seen it like three times. It's a culmination of a whole bunch of different movies that are supposed to be like coming together, and it's like still sloppy in points, but it really works considering how much was like riding against it, and I guess how much is still against it considering it's like a successful first half of a story that, you know, doesn't necessarily end the way that we thought it would. I don't know why I'm pretending like it's a spoiler that they all get snapped out of existence at the end. But I know. Super exciting, super bold. I tried to count how many shots did not have CGI in them. I got into like the 30s before I stopped counting just because it was like too hard to tell. But it's kind of amazing that this movie's one big polygon celebration from beginning to end. So that's what I enjoyed this time watching Infinity War, but the rest of you guys, still enjoyable. Infinity War.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are you the kind of cinephile who's been known to use IMDb to track the timeline of someone's career, or a self-described movie nerd? Then you should be listening to Blank Check with Griffin and David, #2Friends, who together review directors' complete bodies of work episode to episode.
Think M. Night Shyamalan after The Sixth Sense, or Christopher Nolan after Batman Begins. Blank Check highlights how accomplished directors use, or abuse, the freedom earned through escalating critical and commercial successes. Sometimes those checks clear, and sometimes they bounce, baby.
The hosts are comedian and star of Amazon's The Tick, Griffin Newman, and The Atlantic senior film critic, David Sims.
#2Friends. This is not another bad movie podcast. Even when lambasting some truly absurd filmmaking, their love for these movies shines through. Griffin and David, #2Friends, find a special kind of insight through an appreciation of film that others are quick to dismiss.
So you should listen to Blank Check on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Sometimes they bounce, baby! That's how Griff says it on the show.
I guess I am going to have to listen to it.
And we're back for actual Stephen Kingness here on our second Stephen King Storm Spoilers podcast. We have, it's all Neil. Neil went to the Slack, got some mailbag questions, and tossed them up for Joanna and I to smack around. And then also Neil has probably some better answers than we do for some of these.
Maybe.
But let's try first from Iad, who asks, which novel or short story of King's would you like to see next? Joanna.
So I went with Apt Pupil, which has already been a film with Ian McKellen and Brad Renfro. But I feel like when that movie was made, which was in the 90s sometime, I'm Googling it right now, 1998, directed by, oh no, Bryan Singer. like Nazis felt like a thing of the past. But I feel like there's a lot that we could do with bringing this back. You know, it's about like, basically you find out that this guy played by Ian McKellen was a Nazi and there's an impressionable young boy, sort of like this. So this idea of like these, young men and, the allure of Nazism, like that's, that would be a very interesting and topical thing. Hashtag, I'm never stopping to talk about Trump. That's an unwieldy hashtag, you know, for us to talk about now.
Don't stop the Trumping. Don't stop the no. Not a better hashtag yet. We'll get to it. We still have 2 years. So hear me out for my Stephen King novel. I'd say the nonfiction on writing, although half of it is basically about like sentence structure and how to build stories, and you probably couldn't adapt that. The first half is like an abbreviated Stephen King autobiography, and I'm saying make the Stephen King movie. And unlike Castle Rock, which I really enjoy but is definitely its own thing, allow the like Stephen Kingness of the 80s, 90s, and this current cinema period sort of leak through into the life of the writer as he goes on. I would watch that. Basically like an adaptation, but Stephen King, which actually happens in one of the Dark Tower books, but we're never actually going to get that adapted faithfully, so we might
like
as well just do
Being John Malkovich, but with Stephen King.
Yeah, that would also be good.
Ooh. Cool. Let Spike Jonze make it.
Yeah. I think that's that would be good either way.
Nice. I have one.
And it's, Neil has just written into the document, Neil has one.
Well, I didn't want you guys to think I didn't have one. But also, it's a silly one, so I didn't want to make anybody laugh while I was typing in the notes. No, having just watched It, the 2017 version, for the first time this week, and enjoying the hell out of it, because it's really good. I'm ready for It Chapter 2. I would like to see that right now, but it's not made yet. But they are making it, so I guess that sort of goes to the question.
Yeah, with a Bill Hader and a Jessica Chastain.
And not Chris Pratt. It's very weird to me that you go on the IMDb for that movie, It Chapter 2, and there's a poster that's like the main image that comes up that's like Chris Pratt as Ben, and it's like, well, that's not actually true. That's fake.
They put up like a
it's like a fan poster.
Oh my god, the fan art.
Yeah, and it's like Pennywise lives, and I'm like, well, you got some of that right.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm ready for It Chapter 2.
James McAvoy.
Jessica Chastain.
Is it the two? Mm-hmm. Are those the two best Bills? No, gosh, I'm sorry, I forgot about like Pullman and Pack. There's a lot of good Bills. Never mind, I take it back. Hader, like Hader might be up there, but Skarsgård is also up there for me. Like I love Bill Skarsgård, as we will talk about when we talk about Castle Rock. But like, there's a whole pantheon of Bills that I'm just not.
Yeah, you could probably build a Bill pyramid.
Mm. Oh yeah.
Sadly,
the Skarsgård's at the top and the Cosby's at the bottom. Hey. Okay. Let's. I'm gonna stop making groan-worthy jokes, and we're gonna push on. Spurts from our Patreon Slack says, "What is the most bad but fun King adaptation?" Let's go with Joanna again.
Oh, it's got to be Christine, right?
Where there's the. Oh, we all have to agree now? No, it's not Christine. You're wrong.
I didn't pick Christine.
Well, I think it's Christine, where a jealous car comes alive and kills people. It's like Deathbed, the bed that eats, but it's a car. So, Christine.
For it.
Thank you.
I'm going to take Lawnmower Man, which is an adaptation in name only.
Lawnmower Man.
Yeah. It has basically nothing to do with the Stephen King story. The movie, however, is about a mentally challenged lawn keeper who is put into a virtual reality machine that makes him go kind of crazy with power. And it has the classic polygons that actually have sharp corners and ridiculously bad computer graphics from the early age. So I think it's fun, but it is definitely bad, even though there's a sequel.
Wow. Wow. Great stuff.
Neil doesn't have an answer for this. No, you do.
No, I do have an answer for this one. And really what I'd like to challenge you guys on is, let's talk about casting for a second. Let's talk about pedigree. Let's talk about a cast that involves Emilio Estevez from the Mighty Ducks.
Sure, of the Estevez clan.
Of the, the Estevez.
Of Mission Impossible 1 fame.
Sure.
Son of
Ramon Estevez, brother of Carlos Estevez. All of these names are true and real. Okay, yeah.
Very real. My guy, Pat Hingle, OG Commissioner Gordon.
Oh.
Laura Harrington, who is the sister in What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and the voice of Bart Simpson, Yardley Smith. I'm talking about Maximum Overdrive, a movie in which not just one car, but an entire world of trucks come alive and start killing people. And there's one that's like a demon truck, and it's awesome. It's also written and directed by Stephen King, so it's pure. It's pure.
It's pure. So the demon truck is the Green Goblin from Spider-Man, which is how I got lured into watching Maximum Overdrive. Being like, oh, a Green Goblin truck. This will be fun.
I was at a luncheon, filmmaker luncheon at South by Southwest this year. And there were some like famous people there. Richard Linklater was there. Robert Rodriguez was there. But like everyone kind of silently agreed that Yardley Smith, who was also there, was by far the richest person in the room. Right?
Oh, for sure. Not even close.
Not even close. There's Yardley Smith, who could buy and sell all of us without blinking. So, yeah.
Who, if she ever wanted to quit, could demand literally anything she wanted.
I hope she's done that.
Oh, I mean, she has to, because you got to imagine that, like, there's a job in Fox Networks where every season you try out sound-alikes just to have that book for if anybody tries to walk. And, you know, if they were able to do it, they would have done it by now.
She's the Bartman. The Bartman returns. All right.
Bartman. Okay. Next question from Hunter J. If you've never read a King book, where's the best place to start?
This is the one where I don't have an answer, because I haven't read a bunch of King books.
Well, here's my... it's actually my recommendation for people trying out any author with like an overwhelming body of work. This is something I say for like Hemingway or like, you know, just anyone, which is like try their short fiction first to see if you like their style and their tone. Like why? Because like, some of Stephen King's books are famously doorstoppers, like The Stand or It are like at least 2 inches thick, if not more. But he has a lot of short stories and novellas. My favorite, and another way in which to like ease pop culture lovers into reading Stephen King, I think, is the Different Seasons collection, which is 4 novellas, 3 of which have been turned into films. You've got The Body, which was turned into Stand By Me. You've got the Shawshank Redemption one, Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption. You've got Apt Pupil, and then you've got something called The Breathing Method, which is like not that great. But the other three are stone cold classics. Short fiction, low investment, a way to try out Stephen King. And then you can try to like the month-long investment of reading one of his deeper dives. So that's my answer. As a bookseller and a film lover.
As a fan of interconnected universes, I'm going to say screw it. If you're going to start with one of those commitments. My brother's first Stephen King book was The Stand. Oof. I think he tried to get me to get on it, but we are a family that very early on we would just like pick intimidatingly sized books to digest over months of time as small little children. So I'm going to say to you something that I did one summer living in New York when it was super hot and I couldn't really afford air conditioning at the time, which is just read all the Dark Tower books. Just go start at the Gunslinger and keep going all the way through number 7, the Dark Tower. At the time I did it, the Dark Tower, I think, just came out to sort of timestamp it. But although the books have lots of references to other Stephen King stories and sort of serve as the spine overall for his interconnected universe, they're actually just like really good fantasy Western books about how important storytelling is. And I feel like even if you're not someone, if you haven't been lured into a Stephen King book yet, maybe that's your way in. It certainly was for me. Not that I didn't really like Stephen King before all the Dark Tower books, but reading all the Dark Tower books recategorized what had been, I guess, sort of like pulpy fiction I read as like a teenager in my mind into like pulpy horror I could read as an adult in my mind. So although mine is a hell of a commitment, I think it'll really just like get you addicted.
Oh, it's my
that
God.
Little hit of crack.
So recently I've started getting into the audiobooks, and mostly because like I listen to a lot of podcasts. So it's like, you know, most books are only, you know, 5-10 hours long.
How long is this?
The Stand audiobook is 47 hours long.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, as I continue to just listen to books, maybe it'll come up. We'll see.
The other thing I should say right now, this isn't a great debate. I don't have to like win this, but I will say that something that I like about different seasons is none of those stories, except for Breathing Method, are like largely supernatural stories. They're actually more like the body, Stand By Me and Shawshank Redemption. If you've seen them, those aren't supernatural stories. And actually those are like Stand By Me and Shawshank Redemption, the films, are my two favorite Stephen King film adaptations. And I just really like, I think he has a real gift for that kind of storytelling. This is the last thing I'll say, like, horror is not really my genre anyway. So I guess that's enough said there, you know?
I of those four stories, I remember I'm rereading The Body now, and while I was doing it, I remembered why I liked it, which is like there's this, it's like you're saying, not horror based, but also really based on the idea of how people see their own stories. Reader Hayworth in the Shawshank Redemption is, everything you're going to need to know about that prison and, you know, keeping some sort of hope in that, the dark sort of Stephen King world that I think also manifests in App Pupil. But The Body is also like it, but also about writing in the sense that the narrator cuts away occasionally from the story of The Body to excerpts of other short stories he had. So the idea of like different seasons being short stories about people making their own stories always sort of like hooked up with me.
Yeah.
And what's the other short story collection, the one with Needful Things in it?
I'll let you Google it.
Yeah, I'm Googling it as fast as I can.
I thought Needful Things was long, is it not?
Needle Things. Oh no, you're right. It is. It's his first post rehab novel.
Yeah. Because a friend of the podcast, Lindsay Romaine, is reading it right now, and she called it a doorstopper. So,
It's but I think Needful Things and The Body are the interesting things that we might end up pointing you towards if you want to specifically get into Castle Rock, because I think those are both stories. Include other stories about the town before they get to their main plot that sort of sets up all of that. But we're not there yet. Still more questions. Fanny asks, in what role is Bill Skarsgård creepier, Pennywise or Devil Boy? Devil Boy is a reference to the boy in Castle Rock. Nameless boy.
We have different answers here. I'm going to go with mine and then like maybe argue with Dave about his. I'm going to say, so the technical name for this character is the Kid in Castle Rock. And I love him in this role. He is largely silent. And so he's really letting like his creepy Scandi features do like all the work for him and a lot of the work for him. And I think just the mystery around him and the way in which I think it would be easier with a different actor for this threat to not feel very threatening. But I think the way in which Bill Skarsgård is so, he's actually like super beautiful, but also super creepy. And the way in which they've dressed him, like his clothes are just like, like he's a huge man, but like the clothes are just like hanging off his body in a way that's just like makes him otherworldly and unsettling. And then just the way in which, I mean, we'll get into this more when we actually talk about the show, but the way in which like he doesn't do anything terrible things just happen around him, I think makes him even creepier.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm going to take the other side and say Pennywise the clown, because it's kind of amazing to somebody who, you know, grew up on the Tim Curry version, which is basically like a, I don't know, cigar smoking like grandpa clown.
Carnival Barker.
yeah, something like that. Like someone that you feel is actually going to like, you know, insult you like an adult. The Pennywise that showed up in the newest It really does sort of feel like some sort of nightmare creature, in the sense that I always get the idea that he's having fun, he's not ever threatened. And the reason I think Bill Skarsgård particularly is creepier there is because, with the exception of like the really obvious CGI things, like to get his head to rip open or his body to contort in certain ways, there's a lot of that that's just Bill Skarsgård's performance, him being able to make that face so he could drool or allow one of his eyes to move independently of the other. And then also the voice, which the kid's voice kind of bugs me because it's so soft, but maybe that'll come around. It's very sparsely used. It's not like he's monologuing, but Pennywise, just going from Tim Curry expectations to let's see what this movie's going to try to do, to that first scene with the eyes shifting color and the different tones of voice, locked in that as like a classic Pennywise. Now, no knock Tim Curry, but the better one is in the new It.
Yeah, I think he's, I agree with you on so much of what you said. I think he's amazing in It. And I think especially because we have this, like, a lot of us have this deep association with Tim Curry's performance, for him to like be able to differentiate it, I completely agree with you, is amazing. That being said, I think Tim Curry's Pennywise did so much work of like already giving us this primordial fear of clowns that like Bill is kind of building on that anyway, no matter what. But I will agree,
it's not the clown for me. It's like his eyes go different directions before his face splits open into like a tooth maw.
Well, I mean, I think if they had like not done the maw, it would have been scary for me, because like the stuff that he does, like, and this is the stuff that's closer to the kid, the stuff that he does where you just like see his face in the gutter in It, mm-hmm. and like he's not before the end of It, you know what I mean, when he's just like fucking with Georgie, like that's terrifying to me. And then when you add CGI teeth, or like the scene later when they're in the house and he's like folded up in the fridge and like unfurls and stuff like that, like, and drooling on them, like the more he's like an actual aggressor, the less scary he is for me. But when he's like this just menacing figure that you see, that is scarier to me. Neil,
see,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was gonna say that that's almost the exact opposite, because the reason I picked Pennywise over the kid is like I am afraid of Pennywise like walking up and just ripping my arm off. I don't know that I've seen enough from the kid to like be afraid of him. I just know that he's bad.
I feel like the kid is like in, to bring up the classic Stone Cold classic movie Signs, the kid is like in Signs when the alien like just walks across the footage at the birthday party and you're like, whoa, okay, and it's genuinely scary. Then later in Signs, when you get like too much of the aliens, you're like, I'm not scared anymore of this CGI swaying thing that is defeated by water, you know. So like I think it's like that less is more kind of thing. It's the same with like, that's a rule of movie monsters, right, is like you leave more up to the imagination. But I'm curious, like Neil, who has It so fresh in your memory from having just watched it and having just watched a bunch of Castle Rock, like where your thoughts lie on this?
Yeah, I am fully prepared to break this tie. Because what I will say, having watched it this past week, is that I will agree to a certain extent with Dave in that that is a better performance, because I think he's doing more and he really shows off some range of creepiness or weirdness. But I hate to be an absolutist about the question, but it's really just who's creepier. The kid is 100% creepier, because he's pretty much the devil. Also, the looks are weird. And I will tell you why Pennywise isn't that creepy, and this comes from someone who hates clowns. The minute he started talking in the movie, I paused the movie and texted my roommate Theo, who you'll remember from last week's podcast. And I was like, oh my God, I forgot that the clown talks. This movie's hilarious.
That's true. I didn't find it that I was so, like, the trailer for it really scared me, and I thought I wasn't gonna be able to see it, and I actually saw the movie for this podcast and faced my fears, which, like, anyway, and then I wasn't that
now we've both done it.
So
I don't know what it is about the voice or the fact that the clown talks at all that I thought he was funny. So I'm going, like, legit unnerving. It's the kid from Castle Rock so far. Yeah. So there you go.
Touché,
problem solved,
I guess. Yeah.
But Pennywise, I will say Bill Skarsgård is doing more.
He's great.
Interesting stuff in
so
it.
Good. I think he's
it's
so
just
good.
Not as creepy as the kid.
I think he's so good in both. I've never seen Hemlock Grove, but apparently he's a great vampire in Hemlock Grove. So
he's great in 10 seconds of Deadpool too. So
yeah, he is. He's really funny in that. He's really good at that. There's a shot, like, if you Google Bill Skarsgård Hemlock Grove, there's this, like, very famous, like, image of him just, like, smeared in blood that makes me tempted for a hot second to watch that show.
Sounds like something a Skarsgård would do.
Very Skarsgård-y. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Final question for this section from Bajacobra. If you could match any King property to be made into either a movie or TV show, which director, showrunner would you want attached to it?
I don't mean Neil. To, like, pronunciation splain the Latino on this podcast.
Baja Cobra.
Baja Cobra.
I was like, yeah, I think it's Baja Cobra.
As soon as I said it out loud, I realized that, you know, there are other languages. But, you know, English-speaking Dave just took it syllable by syllable. Neil.
This one, I don't know how much of a reason I have behind this. I'm going to be upfront, didn't put a ton of thought into it, but the two things that stuck in my mind were Maximum Overdrive, which I've already talked about being great. And, let's let Catherine Bigelow do it. Cause I think she needs to do a fun movie. I'm ready for her to not make a movie about the endless wars of America. I'm ready for her to make a fun movie again. And
Catherine Bigelow, make a truck movie.
Killer Trucks sounds great.
I would actually side. I would do that. I would watch that in a second.
I imagine it would be like you know, all the chase scenes in, like, Terminator 2. Like, mm-hmm. And I'm not just saying this because James Cameron and Catherine Bigelow were married at one point. But like that kind of 90s. Well, James Cameron was attached to Catherine Bigelow's greatness. Is all I'm saying. I'm saying that like 90s gritty sort of raw action movie style. I'm for it.
Well, you're saying real trucks is what you're saying.
Oh, hell yeah, real trucks. This isn't, yeah. I didn't nominate Michael Bay for this. Real trucks.
My answer is we're going to cancel HBO's Watchmen to get Damon Lindelof back. We're going to cancel CBS's The Stand, which is going to come next year to get The Stand back.
Which I'm assuming will be 150 hours of television.
Yeah, who knows how long they're going to do it. And we're going to put Lindelof onto a TV version of The Stand, which is just going to be him doing Stephen King leftovers, which is going to be the best for everybody.
Which is a show called Castle Rock. So my response is that Dave is correct in that it should be Lindelof. But I reject the premise that we have to cancel Watchmen. I want Lindelof's Watchmen. but like maybe we do Watchmen. Let's do 3 to 4 seasons of Watchmen. Like, let's not overstay our welcome. Let's do what he did with The Leftovers. 3 to 4 seasons of Watchmen. Can't get rid of that CBS stand for sure. And then let Lindelof do The Stand. Because
Here's the twist though. He has to come back to Twitter, and he and Stephen King have to discuss it on Twitter only.
I don't know. Is him coming back to Twitter going to distract from his Instagram game? Because he's my favorite Instagram follow. Because he just photoshops the fish stuns from The Last Jedi into everything. I don't know if you followed Damon Lindelof on Instagram.
I do not, but I'm going to right after.
Oh my God, it's the best thing in the whole world.
But yeah, no. So in order to make this a fully tortured Stephen King writer situation, we also need Lindelof to have to answer questions from Stephen King on Twitter.
Lost already slowly drove Damon Lindelof insane.
Yeah, The Stand would literally kill all of us.
Yeah.
It'll be great. Let's do it.
Yeah. Hello, listeners. We're going to read off our small council level subscribers at stormspoilers.com/Patreon, because that's what you get if you're on the small council every month. You get shouted out like Abby Grenier. Oh man, we're gonna do last names. Here we go. Adam Wells.
Oh man, it's a genetically Dave thing.
Yeah.
Adrian Martinez, Ajax, Alejandro Villarreal, Alexander Walgren, Alyssa Scott, Amber Vickers, Amy Richard, Amy Gomez, Amy Calhoun, which I know how to spell thanks to Sharp Objects this week. Great. Andrea Kojic. There we go. Annie AK, who is always the easiest. Aubrey Iyer and Ben O'Gorman are the first 15.
Nice. I've got a list of people that starts with Bethany Townsend. I've got also Billy Bosky, which I feel like I also... Never mind. Brandy Mandado. We've got Bree, who doesn't have a last name. Makes it so much easier. Brian Morawski. Brianne Polito. Bronwyn Beck. Brian Rapp. Bryce Quinn. Cameron Fowler. Chris Saunders. Chris Miracle. Christina Klein. Christina Sullivan. Christopher McGrain. And Chuck Parkey.
By the way, if we have butchered your name, please feel free to message us and let us know, and we will put a pronunciation guide in for next time. I would like to thank Cody Drygrease, Corey Hume, Crystal Kirk, Damon Van Buren, Dan Cleland, Daniel Bultima, Danielle Pensinger, David Cox, David Adam, David Koplos, Debbie Denise, or Denice, Del Nakamura, which is the name I've read out a million times on a million podcasts. Thanks, Del. Dennis Ramirez, Derek Doc, and Derek Bachman. Thank you all so much.
And, of course, if you want to join the Small Council, you go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. Next week, there will be more names, and every week, there will be more names, as our Small Council grows bigger and more names powerful. Forever. Names.
1,000 years, names.
And we're back to talk about Castle Rock. At this point, you should be able to access episodes 1 through 5 at Hulu.com. It's been an interesting ride so far. I think Joanna and I have managed to see 3 future episodes. Neil's up all the way through 5. We're only going to be talking about the first 5 in general. That's as much spoiler warning as you need for right now. I will update you if things get sticky.
We'll let
sticky.
You know if the weather gets any worse here in the storm.
Exactly.
Pew.
Neil, I think you caught up most recently. What have you been thinking about Castle Rock so far? We're halfway through.
I have several thoughts about Castle Rock. First, I'm way into it. The show, really cool, very moody. I love this cast. It's great. The guy from Moonlight, Andre, whose last name I always forget. What's that guy's name?
Andre Holland. What?
Andre Holland. Yes, I knew it was a country. I always just forget which European country it is.
Andre Denmark.
Andre Denmark. I love this cast. I love the vibe of it. I'm into intricate storytelling. I love reading about the Easter eggs that I don't understand. But I do have a couple of concerns. One, why the fuck does anybody live in this town? seems like a bad thing. Seems like a bad idea to live in this town. Two, they know that's the devil, right? Like, they know that guy is, like, evil, right? Also, Melanie Lynskey, forever. Those are my initial thoughts of Castle Rock.
Yeah, it has been really nice to see, at least for the first half of the series, I think it's more King, and then it slowly starts becoming its own thing, but allowing, I think, like, the mood of some of the writing and at least Alan Pangborn having to be re-updated for a modern-day setting works really well in, like, the first two episodes. Maybe it's because I, like, started binging at like, that point. Mm-hmm. But there's, I think, a middle part to this series that I think we're right in the middle of, where I was losing the overall direction of why we were talking about this. Because the premise, at least in the first episode, is Andre Holland's character is called back to his hometown to represent the kid who they've found being kept in a hole by the old warden who had just committed suicide. And so it seemed like we were going to go in that direction, and then also sort of sharp objects like look into weird trauma in his past. It isn't until the movie starts going on that I think it starts to pick away at the supernatural barrier between King's like moodiness in Castle Rock and is there actually things going on, with the exception, I guess, of our character who has a mild shining right from the beginning. Who is awesome. Heels
Can
right.
you explain what a shining is for those people who don't know what it is?
So The Shining, like the movie The Shining, is a psychic connection where sometimes, depending on what Stephen King story you're in, you could get glimpses of the future or of somebody's past. In this case, I forget the character's name, but she has like an extreme empathy and can sometimes maybe be controlled by another person, but could definitely has a connection to the Andre Holland character where she could feel what he feels if she opens herself up to it.
Her name, and then, yeah, the character's name is Molly Strand. His character's name is Henry Deaver. These, I think, are like really, really good fake Stephen King names. Don't you think?
Oh, yeah. They are so good as that I kept thinking, like, no, that's from a book. That's not the character I was thinking of. But yeah, Molly Deaver.
Molly Strand.
No,
Henry,
Molly Strand.
Henry Deaver.
I recommend we all pull up our Wikipedia
Henry or IMDb. Michael.
Get up the IMDb app.
Because I think for our listeners, it's easier for them to track character names than actor names. But the thing I wanted to address a couple things. Like, the question is, how much do you need to know about the Kingverse? I think a question a lot of people have is, how much do you need to know about the Stephen Kingverse in order to enjoy Castle Rock? And I say zero, actually. I think this show is really good at invoking like a King vibe without, and any Easter eggs that are there are there purely for your enjoyment and are not necessary to understanding the way in which the story unfolds. Dave, have you done any for like Polygon or Thrillist or anything like any kind of Stephen King Easter egg work? I want to plug your work before I plug Lindsay's.
No. Plug Lindsay. She's the one doing it.
All right. Lindsay Romaine, friend of the pod, as I mentioned, has been doing great stuff over at Thrillist. She's got one that's like all the Easter eggs in the opening credits, and that's like really obsessive and fun. Like every, you know, page of whatever book, she's like figured out what it is. And then she did a great piece that was just sort of like what broader stories it would be like nice for you to know about movies or whatever in order to orient yourself in the world of Castle Rock. And those are both great reads. I recommend both of them, but those just like enhance your experience. And I really feel like you can just watch it, because I watched the first four episodes without reading Lindsay stuff and without having like a really deep Stephen King knowledge. Yeah, I've seen Shawshank Redemption and like a lot of this takes place at Shawshank Prison. And yeah, there are like music references to the Shawshank Redemption movie right off the bat and like jokes about like the warden killing himself. I guess it's not a joke. In the first episode, like there's all this stuff, but like you don't need it to get the story. And that's what I really appreciate. Or like you have stuff like the stuff with Molly Strand and Henry Deaver, who are you know, played by Melanie Lynskey and Andre Luxembourg, are like two characters who like had an experience as children that have turned them into like fucked up adults. And that's the story of it without being the story of it. You know what I mean? And so like you have these like things that are Stephen King's stories without being exactly the Stephen King story. And actually like I asked Lindsay before we recorded this podcast, I was like, what do you think I should watch to like prep to talk about Castle Rock for this podcast? And she was like, she recommended the same thing that Dave recommended, which was Needful Things. And since they're both smart people, I decided to listen to them and watch the movie. And I didn't know that Alan Pangborn was like a Stephen King character. And Alan Pangborn is the former sheriff played by Scott Glenn, who is, you know, the beau of Ruth Deaver played by Sissy Spacek. I didn't know that that was an existent King character. And like, I actually am glad I didn't know that because like he's a good guy. He's a Stephen King hero, a classic Stephen King hero. But like Scott Glenn's so creepy generally that like I didn't know if I could trust the Alan Pangborn character until we're like a good way through the series. And now I feel like I could trust him. And I feel like I would have had that preconceived notion of him. Like Henry Deaver is suspicious of this guy who's shacking up with his mom. And if I had known from episode one that Alan Pangborn is a Stephen King hero, I'd have been like, don't be suspicious of that guy. That's Alan Pangborn. What are you doing? You know what I mean? And so like there's ways.
He wouldn't do anything weird to your mom.
Right. So there's ways in which knowing too much about Stephen King, like I think could hinder your enjoyment. So anyway, I know that that was a lot of me ranting, but the last thing I want to say is like every Easter egg or reference, I should say, I think is like beautifully and exquisitely placed, except for the name of Jane Levy's character, which is Jackie Torrance, which is a terrible like masterclass in how not to do an Easter egg, is calling her character the same name as Jack Nicholson's character in The Shining. And we should mention, I don't believe this episode's aired yet, but there's like she explains it.
Oh, no, that's this week's episode.
Oh, that's episode 5. And it's even worse. So like,
oh, that was the one I got, though.
But it's bad.
It's a lazy one.
It's terrible and bad. So
I was like the Captain America gif. I was like, I get that reference. Because I didn't get, obviously, like, I think I agree with Joanna completely that you have to have zero knowledge, because I feel like even though I've seen a bunch of Stephen King things, that I have zero Stephen King knowledge. It's mostly just brain rot at this point. But this notion that the show, it has the vibe. Like it has, I like to think of this thing, emotional muscle memory. Like there's an emotional muscle memory that you have from the first time you saw, you know, The Shining or Stand By Me or, you know, The Mist. And so it has that same vibe, just like Spielberg movies and its ilk has a vibe. And I really enjoyed going back and sort of seeing some of the things that I didn't really realize. Like, I mean, there's obvious ones like the Cujo reference where he talks about the dog who tore through town. Like I know that one. But being able to go through and see some of the, like the little ones is great. And I thought that was a lot of fun. I feel like it added to, but I am curious about the point that Joanna made about if you knew too much about Stephen King, would you be sort of wrapped up in it? Which I guess is the Dave question.
Well, right. This is okay. This is, and I know you just said that's the Dave's question. And then I started talking, but like, this is where Dave and I often like disagree. We're like Dave, because Dave cares a lot about interconnected universes, and I usually don't. And not that I don't, but I don't care as much. And so like, would you agree, Dave, that this is like a conversation / argument you and I have had a lot where I'm just sort of like, it doesn't matter. And you're like, it does. And, or you get a thrill out of that. Like this, I always think of our disagreement over whether or not Age of Ultron is a good movie. You get a thrill out of the various like, ways in which you see the strings to different storylines. And I think it can get in the way of enjoying the story that we're watching. And that's just something we've disagreed at. There's the big question about like not to make this about The Last Jedi, but there's like, I guess the people who are watching it like sort of avidly on Reddit, and once again, Lindsay Romain was sort of my ambassador to help me know what the fandom is thinking. They're like obsessed with knowing who Henry Deaver's parents, real parents are. I think it doesn't matter at all who his real parents are.
And we got a parents theory situation.
Yeah, we got a Last Jedi situation. I think it won't matter at all. But she's like, well, people think it might be this character from this thing or this character from this thing. And I'm like, well, whoever it is, because of the way that Castle Rock is operating in terms of you don't have to know Stephen King's work, the reveal itself can't be the name. You know what I mean? It can't be like, oh, and his real dad is Han Solo. You know what I mean? Like, it has to be like the name alone is not going, that would just be another gentle Easter egg. It's not gonna, it can't be the explanation for why Henry is however he is or whatever that is. And I know now is the time that Dave talks because I just talked in his place. Dave.
Well, I mean, although you're right that we do have this disagreement about things a lot, the only reason I feel more confident is we're talking about a Stephen King Bad Robot series. Like, how is this not going to connect to something else at the end of it? Like, even if it's an anthology series, I think this, what, for like first season is just going to introduce us into what we're talking about. And I think there have been some minor hints that's the way the series is going to go ultimately. I'm not sure if they're in episode 5 or not. Yeah, you're right in the sense that we've found ourselves at this crossroads again. I think it's, for me, it's a lot more like why I enjoyed watching Hannibal, because that was a very loose adaptation of a series of novels that was instead trying to be like mood cinema on television. And I think that, for the most part, Castle Rock is closer to that than like a Marvel Cinematic Universe thing where I'm worried about Age of Ultron throwing actual plot things forward. It's more, I'm interested to see how they've taken core ideas that are specifically this author and molded it into a clay that is starting to feel like its own Bad Robot show, which I don't think is bad. I think it's great. That's like the way adaptation should work.
I know what this is. It's not adaptation, it's interpretation.
Yeah, yeah.
Or deconstruction.
Well, I was thinking of like what this would look like if it were like the Neil Gaiman verse or something. You know, like take another author that you've read a lot of their works and like what does it look like for someone to do like, yeah, a mood piece, as I think you sort of...
It would be like that time J.J. Abrams made a Steven Spielberg movie. That was like a Steven Spielberg movie.
Or like what Stranger Things is.
Yeah, basically.
You know what I mean? So like, yeah.
It's like if you made a whole series that was basically just a bunch of Spielberg stuff smashed together.
Mm-hmm. And I also wonder if the reason that like
but
the childhood narrative...
Player One.
No, yeah, exactly. Not literally Spielberg smashing stuff together.
Is the childhood narrative like part of Stephen King missing from Castle Rock because Stranger Things does that? Like, are our antagonists all adults reminiscing about childhood? Because that's easier than just accidentally making Stranger Things season 3.
Are we talking about... you think the antagonist of Castle Rock
is? Well, no, I think he's saying is that, like, even in Needful Things, which is a story set in Castle Rock, like, you've got a kid protagonist. Stephen King stuff usually has a kid protagonist, and there isn't, like, there are adult characters as children in this, but you don't really, other than, like, Henry's son, who's
right,
the older
who I wouldn't
kid.
Necessarily say is a protagonist
no,
either. He's more like a...
Yeah, you don't have a kid protagonist, which is unusual for a Stephen King story. I agree with you. And, yeah, maybe they did want to sidestep the idea of just doing Stranger Things.
Well, I do think that, I mean, what I find interesting thematically about Castle Rock is this common theme among a lot of Stephen King things, and maybe this is the same dynamic, which is it's about the people who are in positions of authority, which is usually adults in the lives of children, and them ignoring evil or sort of brushing evil under the rug. Like if you're somebody who is like that, who is corrupt or sort of allows evil, you know, passively to happen, then Stephen King fucking hates you. Like, he thinks you're the worst thing. So I think it's more about the authority thing, because when you think about Castle Rock, I would almost say like there is still a kids and adults thing. It's like these two different generations of people. Like, I want to know what the generation of people that is Alan and the mother and the warden who kills himself. You know, it's they're the adults. They're the older generation of authority that did some really weird shit. And then, you know, we have Henry and Molly and Jane, or no, her name
Jackie.
Jackie Torrance, who gave herself that name.
Jesus.
They're like the younger generation. So it's kind of the same dynamic. It's just not literally children this time.
What's interesting
I was going to say we should move into theory time because I want to respond to that a little bit more, but maybe with theoriness?
Yes, but really quickly, I would say that Henry and Molly, like, I agree with you. I also think Henry and Molly, well, Molly especially, are in states of, like, arrested development. I would say that, what else did I want to say? I don't remember.
Well, it's almost like their story, their current stories are as much about what happened to them as children as it is about what's happening to them now.
Which is what it is. Like, that's the story of it. Like, these children try to face a monster. They think they've conquered it. They grow up. They're fucked up. They have to conquer that monster again. That's what it is. And that's what Henry and Molly, I think, are sort of, like, looking at. But it's interesting that what you say about people in authority ignoring evil being Stephen King's, like, most hated thing, and I agree with you, but what's interesting is that you've got Alan and to a greater degree Warden Lacey like trying to do the opposite of that, which is like trying to address and contain an evil order to protect a town, and the way in which that was like successful until it wasn't, you know.
Is it interesting that I don't trust that? Like, I don't know if they are right. Like,
the show
seems to be setting me up for that. Like, the show seems to be setting me up to believe that Warden Lacey and Alan were correct in bottling up this kid. So far, through five episodes, it seems like they're right. But for some reason, I don't trust it because they're just old dudes.
Well, so before we go into, like, theory corner, which I guess is, like, when it's really going to start storming, right, Dave, I guess?
It's a typhoon, is it coming?
The typhoon's coming, so, like, maybe hop off if you don't want to hear us talk about this. I guess I will just drop that, like, there is a character called The Kid in this show, played by Bill Skarsgård. So, like, if you're like, where's the kid?
Oh, yeah.
In the show, there's a character called
There is literally a kid.
Yeah.
But he's creepy and he's 6'4" apparently.
Sure is.
Yeah. All right. And with that, I'm going to say we're going to talk vaguely about Castle Rock theories, maybe include pepperings of foreknowledge, but not outright spoiling. But if that's not in your bag, we'll see you next week. The reason I wanted to chime in there is things stopped being evil in Castle Rock after 1991 because they jailed up the kid. And that's also the year that Needful Things, the subtitled The Last Castle Rock book, takes place. So things have been fine in Castle Rock since they were children. And it's almost like the place makes them forget sort of like it. So like them coming back is answering the question of why Castle Rock hasn't been evil since 1991, I thought.
Well, so I would say that my working theory... we're supposed to think that like the kid, you know, like Neil keeps saying, because the show is like leading him by the hand of this, like that kid is the devil. That kid's the devil. That kid's the devil, right? That kid's the devil.
Yeah.
And the creator,
Alan says that to us.
And the creators have said that like he is connected to a mythological creature or something like that, a mythological figure from King lore, and that his name is a spoiler. And so that's why like some people think he's like Russell Flagg, or some people think he's, you know, Randall Flagg, or like something people think he's like a classic King antagonist that has cropped up a lot. I disagree. I think he is Henry Deaver. I think he, like, when Henry Deaver went missing in 1991, I think some part of him got trapped inside this. I don't know if he's, like, fully Henry Deaver, but I will also note that bad stuff doesn't start happening in Castle Rock until Henry Deaver returns as well. And so, like, I'm trying to work out some theory that, like, there's like...
Is this some Fight Club shit?
Well, I think there's maybe a bit of Henry Deaver and the kid and a bit of the devil and Henry Deaver, and maybe they both need to like be together in order for like bad stuff to happen. But I was rewatching episode one and like the kid gets out, but like the weird shit, like the jail guard played by Noel Fisher hallucinating stuff doesn't happen until he meets Henry. And if the kid,
you don't think it's the fist bump,
and if the kid is Henry
Deaver,
yeah,
don't fist bump the devil, by the way.
If the kid,
not cool.
If the kid is Henry Deaver, if Bill Skarsgård is playing some form of Henry Deaver, then that reveal makes, because I was thinking about that, then I rewatched episode one, and rewatching episode one, them being like, what's your name, and he says Henry Matthew Deaver, which we then like is revealed like that's what the warden told him to say, but like what if that's actually his name? Whoa.
So basically what you're saying to me is this series also going to end with Terry Quinn saying there's one black and one white.
I don't like that joke at all.
But yeah, it could.
I don't have a clean answer, but what I will say is like I think there's a reason he's called the kid. I think that there's a reason why he's quite childlike. I think there's a reason why he seems so like helpless and upset by all the bad things that are happening around him. And I think, you know, like I don't think him being the elemental evil is the answer. Too easy,
says Joanna.
Right.
The evil is just the friends we made along the way.
So if Joanna's right, and they had that the Howling Man Twilight episode on a television screen, then we are being expertly trolled.
What's the Howling episode of the Twilight Zone?
So the Howling Man episode of Twilight Zone is a man finds a guy locked in a prison cell, and everybody around him is dead. And he convinces him to let him out, and it turns out it was the devil in the prison cell.
But I don't think he's the devil, because like
Well, I mean, whether or not, granted, you're right, but they obviously want us to think that if they're planting that Easter egg, right, being the thing that's like on the television
that
show.
Would explain. So even in the first five episodes, there is Henry, Andre Holland's Henry, when he's a child, is his father, the preacher, locking him up in the basement?
Andre Bulgaria?
No, he's taking him out into the woods.
He's taking him out of the woods. Like, we can't talk
why
about
why. Does he...
I know why, but we can't talk about it.
Yeah, so I'm curious as to what that is. So that actually lends credence to the theory of like them being somehow connected, like a almost supernatural psychotic break.
Well, Lindsay let me know, and maybe Dave knows a little bit more about this, that there's like a concept that I think is explored in the Dark Tower books called twinning,
mm-hmm,
twinners, where you're like
twinners and twinning.
Yeah, two different like basically a doppelganger from a different universe, but that doppelganger does not have to look like you or be your gender or anything like that. So like you could have an Andre Czech Republic and a Bill Skarsgård be like doppelgangers of each other, even though they look nothing alike. But there's something about the, like I said before, that term Arrested Development, there's something about the child, the fact that he's called the kid, the childlike nature of him, the fact that he appeared when Henry disappeared, and just the way in which they like have, like, Bill Sarsgaard, yeah, he's skinny, but he's a huge dude, and all the clothes just, like, hang off him. Like, he looks like a kid wearing grown-up clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Henry, if I... rewatching episode one, Henry doesn't have any memories that come before Alan picking him up off the ice. Like, his death row client asks him, what's your first memory? And he flashes to Alan picking him up off the ice. So, like, I'm not saying... If the character played by Andre Holland, Henry Deaver, is the devil, he certainly doesn't know he's the devil. But there is something significant to the fact that he has no memory.
Oh, this makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean? He has no memory before that.
And the evil is like the gun and the bullets situation. Like one of them's the gun, one of them's the bullets.
Yeah, you need
the two of them together.
Yeah, evil wonder twins. And
that
like,
makes a lot of sense. And maybe, I don't know how, I mean, Stephen King gets kind of biblical, but maybe the idea is they took the devil and the only way to defeat him was to split him into two people.
I love that.
But when they come back together, they truly melt down the world
because,
with fire? I don't know.
I mean, Yeah, because this idea of we're watching this show and like, okay, we go into the show and Bill Skarsgård, who played It in or Pennywise in It, is in it, and you're like, okay, so that guy's the bad guy, and Andre Holland, who I quite love, is like our return, like, oh, that guy's the hero.
Well, unless we watched American Horror Story.
Yeah, but that was, I mean, I'm glad if people didn't watch that season of Roanoke, it was bad. But like Andre Holland generally.
How I did dare watch you.
Some of that season. It was bad.
If you watch.
How dare both of you.
If you watch.
Kathy Bates is rolling over in her
not
bed grave.
She is rolling over in whatever puritanical
in her butcher's
camp
grave.
She's still living in.
If you watch The Nick or Moonlight, then you like Andre Holland. And so, like, Andre Holland
is, yeah, I've been 100% on that guy's side.
Yeah,
but
that's
now,
our hero, and Bill Skarsgård is our villain, and, like, what if it's
but
not
now
that
I think
easy?
He's at least 40% the devil.
Yeah, that's what I think. That's my theory, so.
Oh, I love
I like
this.
That theory. I'm not sure if it's going to be the devil, because the town already defeated the devil.
Yeah. Or it's, like, whatever evil entity they come up with.
Yes, yes. Bring the Dark Tower to television. Just if,
you
if
want
they
that
can't
to be
do
Randall
it for
Flagg, is what you're saying.
No, no, it doesn't need to be Randall Flagg. But if it's a twinner, we're already on our way. Like, this is an anthology series.
So this
just
is,
get
this
us there.
Backdoor Dark Tower series.
Yeah, so
get us.
Ron
get
Howard's
us to a door opening to a
two.
Rose and a gunslinger at the end of season 5, and then end the series, and I'll be so happy.
We should say that. Yeah, they've already announced that, like, next season is not going to have the same cast. It's an anthology series, so, like, I'm hoping it will have some of the same cast, and Noel Fisher, who played the prison guard, who I like so much and who died way too early for my taste in the series, gets to do something else. Or we undo that prison massacre.
Do you, wait, so let me understand this for a second. Are they, it's an anthology series with different stories, but still set in the same town? Like, just in a different time period?
I mean, I guess if you call it Castle Rock, you sort of have limited yourself.
Yeah.
But
so it's like, we go, you know, it's like when you watch It, or like I did when I watched It, because that's all my Stephen King knowledge is just the last two things I watched. There's like the different periods of when the evil comes back in It. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, well, they can make a series out of that where it's just like, well, now here's what happened in 1938. And then here's what happened in 1500 or whatever.
Yeah, I think the opening credits hints that we could go outside of Castle Rock, but stay in fictional Stephen King Maine. Like the base where the Stand virus is developed is like sort of near there, and Derry's on one of the maps that they like show. So like, I feel like we could stick around the same area and still have it be called Castle Rock, but like expand it outwards or different versions of Castle Rock across some sort of great story wheel that is spinning around a tower.
Different versions of Castle Rock.
Oh shit, and then they gotta use the gunslinger to shoot the guy. It's great.
Yep,
I love
gotta
it.
Gotta protect the beam.
Let's do it.
The what was I gonna say about all this stuff? I don't know, but I'm excited.
I'm fully in on all of these theories, by the way.
Love Castle Rock, like,
and it makes me want to write my theory column about Castle Rock this week to just come up with even weirder stuff.
Yeah, sure. The idea that I wrote on Twitter how much I was enjoying Castle Rock, and like a lot of response, I got a lot of people being like, yeah, and then a lot of people were like, it feels slow to me. I binged it in chunks. I binged it in 1 through 4 and then the rest in another chunk. And like Dave was saying sort of like binging made it feel slower to him. I feel like this is better binged. I think this is should be binged.
Really?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm, yeah, I'd say binge. I'd say do it week to week.
I
think it's, yeah, it especially feels like as it goes on. Well. I feel like if you were watching it every week, we could be doing a podcast about it every week. And then if you binge it, you're just going to get all the answers. Like, I think that they're mysteries.
You're right.
It's,
I do like talking.
It's still
theories.
A bad. Yep. Yeah, it's still a bad robot show. So it's still, I think, beneficial to watch as it's going on. And so even if we get to the end and are disappointed, we had these few weeks where we're really fucking excited about it.
That's interesting. You know what? When we run out of ideas for the off-season tour, which I'm sure we'll eventually do, we'll just do Castle Rock season 1, episode by episode.
Okay, here we go. Back to Castle Rock season 1. All right. I think that'll do it, unless anybody else has any theories they want to get off their chests.
No.
No.
I like y'all's theories. Those are good. Is there more to Jackie, you think?
Is there more to Jackie?
Her original name was Donna.
I think there's more Diane. To Jackie only because
Jack.
She's...
Jack and Diane. It's even worse.
Oh, man.
Right?
Oh, she's so on the nose.
She's the writer character, so yes, there's more for her to do, I would assume.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. You're right. She's the writer character.
And that's part of Stephen King's thing, so I imagine she'll be around. We wouldn't be surprised if she shows up next season and they're just like, and Jackie exists. I'd be like, why Jackie Torrance? But fine, Levy.
Can we just make her Diane Torrance?
Jane's great.
I love Jane Levy, but can we just call her Diane Torrance, please? Thank you. I had a stupid other name, but I was so scarred by what happened to me in season one of Castle Rock that I have now decided it is smart to go by Diane. The end.
All right. Despite Neil slightly giving it away earlier, Neil, where are we going next week on our off-season tour?
Oh, shit. Next week is Shark Week.
Terrifying. What is that?
Our pod like a shark fin.
Yeah, we're gonna loop on back to the Patreon secret movie club that we had and talk a little bit of Deep Blue Sea, among other shark movies next week, all culminating with a very stormy review of The Meg, which actually comes out this week. So this is one of the episodes where you can be fully prepared, do the homework over the weekend, and go see the giant shark movie, and then we'll talk about it. I will also be... doing, you know, poems for The Shallows in the middle of the episode. It'll be great.
Ooh, yes. If you're in the United States, Deep Blue Sea is on Netflix. And if you didn't watch it along with us in the Slack, definitely check it out. I thought I remembered it. I did not remember it as well as I thought. That movie is really well paced. I promise you, even though you won't probably like it at the end, if you sit down and start watching it, you will watch the majority of the movie before you realize what you're doing. Until next week, where we get to take on a giant underwater things with teeth that will eat me in my nightmares, where could people find you on the internet? Joanna Robinson.
You can listen to me doing a podcast about the HBO series Sharp Objects on the Still Watching feed for Vanity Fair. You can also find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
Get me over on the filmschoolrejects.com website, which is getting a new spit shine, new coat of paint in the next week. And then I'll have time to write about pop culture again. You can also get my tweets at Rejects. I like 40% recommend it this week. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers and email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
Yes, you could find me on the worst social networking platform at DA7E, where I'll be pinning my work. I believe this weekend we're going to be talking about if the Slenderman movie's any good or not, because I've been tracking it through production, and then they tried to get rid of it, and now they're dumping it and not doing screenings. So eventually when I see it, I'll have to write about it.
I feel like I know the answer to your original question. Based on that story you just told.
Yeah. But, you know, we can all find out together. It's in the execution, Neil. That's what we've learned here at Storm of Spoilers. So I'm going to get executed by Slenderman. Until then, guys, as always, stay vertical. Don't fall down. We'll see you next week. With no arms and short sleeves, a world's deep blue, killers gotta eat too.